And now I would like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Todd from San Diego.
Well, I'm Todd. I'm an alcoholic. Actually, El Cajon, you know, proud of it. East County, go boys, go girls. It's a pretty group. I'm always in the back looking at the back of your heads, you know, and oh my God, you all have faces, and it's a good-looking group in here. It's a happy group, you know. Alcoholics Anonymous is a lifesaver for me. The rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous especially. I did 110 meetings in my first 90 days because it was a good idea, to say the least. I needed a brainwashing, and that's how I got it. A little bit about me. I was born in Detroit in the late 50s. I'm 51. I had my first drink as a little nipper, and I was living in Africa at the time with my parents that went over there as educators, and my dad gave me a drink of his beer. I think I was in second grade. I hated it, so I didn't have a real drinking problem from second grade on up maybe to junior high when I discovered rosé wine. Rosé wine. And my parents were not connoisseurs, right? This was a gallon of Kool-Aid, you know? So we took it, and I lived up on Mount Helix. And the cool thing was I had a neighbor who was really strange. But, you know, when you live up there, you don't have a neighborhood that you can walk down the streets to your friend's house. If you're going to go to your friend's house, you're going to get on your bike, and you're going to whistle on down the hill, and you're going to drive into La Mesa, and it's going to take you a half hour, 40 minutes, by bicycle. So getting friends to come over was even harder because it was all uphill. And you know what? They weren't about ready to do that. So sneaking the wine was nice. You know, me and my neighbor Larry, who was probably about 4 or 5 years older than I was, we'd go on this big rock and we'd overlook all of La Mesa and, you know, the whole deal and sit there and drink this Kool-Aid out of this gallon wine bottle, you know. And I actually stopped at a young age and was just in awe at how kind of cool I felt. You know, I'm a product of the 70s and the 80s, and as that evolved, you know, I never forgot how wonderful and free it was sitting on that big rock and, you know, and waving back and forth. But I never fell off, you know, I never fell off the rock. But that didn't become a common occurrence, you know, to take that wine and do that. That was just one time, and I think I was probably in junior high when I did that. As I got a little older, still living up on the hill, I got into motorcycle riding, and that was a thrill in itself. I did a lot of desert riding, didn't do any drinking out there, just speed. The faster I could go, the better. I've got this new addiction, and it's speed. I want to go fast. So motorcycles did it for me for a long time, and then that fizzled out, and high school was about ready to start. And I was riding my brand new 10-speed to school, and I got hit by a car. And I got my leg completely demolished. It took them 8 hours to put it back together. They wanted to amputate it. Well, the long end of that was is it took me out of my freshman year in high school, and it kind of was a life-changing situation. I could no longer play sports, you know, even as far as swimming events were gone, and I wasn't able to network in this brand new high school and build a new friend network until I went in as a sophomore. And as a sophomore, I felt, you know, a little out. You know, I wasn't in any kind of groups. I didn't know any kind of people, and I kind of fumble-fucked my way around through, you know, my sophomore year and went into my junior year where I started flying airplanes. And I hadn't experimented a whole lot more with the alcohol or the drugs. And so I'm flying these airplanes around, you know, and that was a gas, you know. At 16, I took the airplane up all by myself, and they call it your solo. And so I could never understand what the guy was saying to me in the airplane because they didn't have the headphones. So And so I'm up there just saying, yeah, I know. You know, I'm over eight. You know, I'd fly up the freeway and I'd come down the freeway. Well, I crashed my car on a Saturday night. I totaled it and totaled a couple other cars in the process. And the very next Saturday night, I crashed my mom's car. So they took the flying privileges away when I was in. I really did pay a lot more attention up there. You know, you got to look up, down, you know, and everywhere. You're always looking around. You can't understand that guy anyway. But maybe it saved my life. Maybe it didn't. My senior year, I was introduced to marijuana, pot. And we'd ditch school, and we'd go have a little pot, and then that pot gave me that dry mouth. So, we're back to the Kool-Aid, the rosé. I mean, what better deal than cotton mouth and Kool-Aid? So, and the Kool-Aid, and then we found the Boone's Farm, the Apple Boone's Farm, even better Kool-Aid. And you know what? And chicks dug that shit, you know? You take Boone's Farm and you are getting it, I tell you. And it was what? It was like 95 cents a bottle, and you know, you could just buy a shitload of that stuff. And we just have a ball with that, you know? So during high school, you know, I got all these credits because I wasn't in school, and I graduated early, so I graduated. And I actually had a decent, you know, thing through high school. I was actually kind of promising, you know. My parents are educators, and you know, my sisters were off in college. Well, they were actually my, I'm going to go way back. I was born. We all got that in common, right? And I had a different last name, Burke. So I had a full-on Irish guy with a little Scandinavian somewhere in there. And my birth father was, from what I understand, a wild animal. I mean, this man, he just liked to drink and party. And, you know, they'd have the stories of, well, you know, your dad, we'd find him underneath the tables, you know. And I kind of giggled and I thought, you know, all these people are talking about him under the table, that must be a good thing. Well, this man adopted me when my mom married him, and he became my father. And he raised me, and like Sue, I had a bitchin' childhood. I had a childhood you could damn near make a movie out of. Water skied all summer long and did all stuff. My problem started when I got to California from Michigan. So here I am, senior out of high school. I'm bored to death. You know, my mom says, go to college. Well, I thought, man, I worked so hard in high school, I'm going to take a year off. and I didn't. And, you know, we proceeded to get in trouble because now you got driver's licenses. I started to smoke cigarettes. I started smoking Marlboro Red cigarettes. And I was really liking the Boone's Farm and, you know, and the chicks that came with the Boone's Farm and this marijuana And I was liking it, and I was making a good allowance at home, blowing the leaves. And, you know, we had this big leaf blower, and I just ran it around, and it sucked up all the leaves. I was done in 5 minutes. And that was my job, you know, and the rest of the time was playtime. And you leave a teenage boy with too much playtime, I guarantee you, if he's me, he's in trouble. He's going to go out and find a way to get in trouble. I was hanging out with the surf guys, because the surf guys hung out with the hot chicks. You know, that's just the way it was. And when going to the beach, and after going to the beach, and then smoking the marijuana, and drinking the beer, and drinking the Boone's Farm, it became time for me to start go to college. My dad was a vice president at National University, and he thought it'd be fit if I go there for free. I can go there for free, or I can get a job there. So I took a job there in the mailroom. I was in charge of the mail room and the copy room for National University. And I went and had my little name plaque made, and it said Director of Reproduction and Mail Services. And I thought that was really cute. That was the shit, you know? And all of a sudden, the financial aid person came along and said, you need financial aid. I said, I'm going to school for free. They said, well, you get financial aid anyway. I said, okay. So 3 weeks later, they hand me a check for $3,000. I've never had $3,000 like that in my life before. I didn't even know what to do with it. I got introduced to, because I'm a product of the 70s, and it wasn't just all alcohol, drugs were a big part of my life. When I drank, I wanted to do drugs. When I did drugs, I wanted to drink. They went hand in hand. It was a perfect marriage. I loved it. So I got introduced into the world of cocaine. Now what I found out is when I drank all that Boone's Farm and I did some cocaine, I could drink more Boone's Farm. And I felt just fine. And I could drive. And I could do just about anything on this shit. It was amazing. I went through $3,000. And ATMs had just come out. I thought I was the shit. I had an ATM card, and I'd put that thing in. And one time I had a couple girls I picked up at the bar in the car, you know, and I had my cocaine, and I had my pot, and I had my alcohol. We were going to party after the after hours, and I put my money in the machine, and all this money came out. You'd have thought, they thought I was God. It was cool. I really like it. Now I'm getting hooked on that kind of stuff, and I'm really liking this lifestyle. This is a fast-ass lifestyle. Fast cars, fast girls, sex, drugs, rock and roll. This is life. Now, you know what? I tell you what. These guys in college, you can have it. You know, what the hell is this all about? I'd be sitting in there, and I'd be bored to death. And a little tap on my shoulder. Let's get on here. Let's go party. So, you know, I'd leave one class, and I'd leave another class. Well, one day I went down to help a friend buy a car, and got offered a job. And I went to my dad, and I said, Dad, I think my phone's ringing. I got it on vibrate. I hope that's my phone. Yep. Okay. And I worked that weekend, and I made more money that weekend than I had made in a whole month at the university. And I told my dad, Dad, changing careers. I'm going to be a car salesman. You know, my dad said, I think you'll make a good salesman. Go for it. And I did. And it was fun. I had fun. I don't know if I took any of you or your parents out for a test drive back in the late 70s when they had Volkswagens. If I did, I apologize to you now, because then I went to a job where Mitsubishi's just came out. And my big deal was I'd like to get hired and shit at work in the bathroom. And I'd get drunk, and I'd get stoned, and I'd get high on coke. Then I'd go out and introduce myself. Say, hello, how are you? Let's go for a ride. You know, they'd say, let me see that sedan. I'd say, no, man, you need to go in this car right here. This is Starion. And I'd get in. I'd be as high as shit, and I'd be flying down. I'd say, 0 to 60 goes pretty good, huh? They'd be like, yeah. And I'd say, wait till you see 60 to 0. And I'd slam on the brake. And they'd just be like, holy shit. You know, and I never did sell one of those cars. But God damn, I had fun in them. You know, it was a fun job. And people were buying cars anyway. They didn't care. It was the 80s, and, you know, and you know, that's what we did as car salesmen. We didn't have a good reputation. So I didn't have to have a good reputation. I was already headed there for a bad reputation. So my life, now I got a skill. So, you know, as a car salesman, I got a skill. I can go to any car dealership I want and say, I sell cars. Can I get a job? And I found it to be easy to change jobs. And I did. And one day, I was kind of bored with San Diego. You know, I had the girlfriend, I was in the apartment, I was doing the job. I was, you know, kind of mellowed out just a little bit. And a friend of mine called and said, hey, man, I'm in the Bay Area. You wouldn't believe what's going on up here. So I called my girlfriend. I said, we're breaking up. I'm going to the Bay Area. I got my truck loaded, and I'll see you later. Oh, boom, man, up to the Bay Area. See, I did geographics because I thought it would be more fun. I didn't do it because I had realized that I might have a problem. I did it because I thought there was more action. So, man, when I hit the Bay Area, that place was on fire. That's like 5 San Diegos all around a big bay, you know. There was a party in every town. So I did that, and I lived that lifestyle. And when I got done with the Bay Area, I went up and I hung out with my sister in Sacramento, the state capital. place rocks. I had a lot of fun there. And then I took an airplane one day and went to Phoenix. You know what? There was a couple times I took airplanes and ended up, I don't know why I ended up in some of the places. Remember when you used to be able to walk into the airport and buy a ticket and get on an airplane and just go? I mean, those were the great days, you know. I ended up in Denver one time, and it was cold, so I hung out so I could get on an airplane to come back, and there was a storm, and I was partying in the back of the airplane. I never heard the captain say, San Diego's fogged in, we're going to Los Angeles. I never heard that part. We hit Los Angeles, and I'm like, whoa, what happened to San Diego, you know? And we ended up taking a bus through the fog. I thought it'd be safer to fly over the fog and kind of dive in. So we're on a bus, you know, and the bus driver had a big cooler of alcohol, beer, and wine, you know. I was done with the wine by then, you know. I was done with that wine. So, you know, it wasn't all bad, the alcohol and the drugs and the fast lane life. And when I was in Phoenix, I met this woman who ended up giving me these two incredibly beautiful daughters. And Phoenix, I had, you know, worked my way into upper management in the car business, and things were flowing fairly well. And, you know, after Sunny, my oldest, you know, she's 22 now, was born, it kind of freaked me out. Because her mom wouldn't marry me. It was like, you know, I said, 6 times, will you marry me? 6 freaking times I had to ask her. She finally gave in. I think she had been really drunk that night, but she finally said yes. And we ended up getting married, and Sonny was at our wedding, and we got married, and that's when all that fun kind of stopped, you know? It became a time when, you know, Sonny'd be at the babysitter, and my shift went in at 9, and I'd get to the babysitter's at about 11 because her mom's shift went on until 12, and the babysitter would, like, almost give me a breathalyzer test to see if I was sober enough to pick up my own kid. So one night, I grabbed Sonny, and I figured, you know what, here's what I am. I drink a lot, I party a lot, I got this kid, I'm just going to buy a Volvo. You know, I'm going to buy a Volvo. Why quit drinking? Just buy the safest car they make. So, you know, I strapped Sonny's ass in the back of this Volvo. And now I've discovered rock cocaine. Man, you go through a lot of cocaine real fast with that shit. So I never did figure out how to cook it. So anyway, I remember I took Sonny one night with me to go smoke some rock cocaine. She's almost 2, so she's not going to smoke a whole bunch of it. I wasn't too worried about it. Car had air conditioning. So I'm outside of the car with the... Hell, I don't even know who those people were. But anyway, we're all outside of the car, and we're smoking the thing, and we're drinking the beer. And I get to this point where the sick alcoholic in me says, you can drive with this child in this car. Go ahead. So Sonny and I get in, and we just jam around Phoenix until we get home. And her mom was there that night that I got home. And I don't know what I looked like after I had partied like that, but it must have been pretty scary. Because I got in a shitload of trouble. And then I wasn't allowed to pick my daughter up from the babysitters. And I thought, well, my sick little mind said, good, that's one less thing I have to do after work. I can stay at the bar longer, I can party longer, I can do whatever it was and whatever I wanted to do. And we left Phoenix when Sonny was 2, and I came back to San Diego. And so I left San Diego in a pickup truck, and I came back with a baby in a U-Haul. So, you know, it was quite a journey, to say the least. And, you know, we had this, we got this place, you know, a little townhouse, and we were living there, the three of us, and I kind of calmed it way down, and I got a job, and And then I started seeing some old friends, and it got worse. You know, the usage got worse. It got, you know, back to the point where I couldn't breathe in through my nose, and I couldn't get enough alcohol in me. You know, and alcohol is a funny thing, because I'm an alcoholic, I could never get my thirst quenched. Like, I've got some water that I'm pretty thirsty because I'm talking too much. When I drank beer, I couldn't wait to drink the next one. And my thirst never got quenched. You know, I'd drink until I had to go to the bathroom. When I'd go to the bathroom, and then I'd drink some more. And when I couldn't drink anymore, I'd find some cocaine, and then I'd do some of that, and then I could drink some more. You know, and sure, I had fun, but, you know, in those times, there's times that I woke up on bathroom floors with big knots on my head and just some shit that I thought that was just normal. You know, it didn't faze me. I missed a taxi ride because I was passed out in the bathroom. So what? You just call another taxi. There's always a way around it. My last night of partying, two nights before that, I partied all night, and I came home, and there was a cowbell. Who's got that bell? It was a lot louder than your bell, and it was tied to the door, so when I'd open the door, the bell would go off, and their mom would wake up, because their mom was into the big gallons of wine, and she'd drink some wine while I was out partying. She wanted to make sure she could wake up when I came home, so she'd give me a good ass chewing for that, and it woke her up. It worked, you know. And I said, okay, I'm done. You know, I've got to be more responsible. I've got this beautiful daughter, and I've got to be more responsible. I stopped for 2 days. And I don't know, 3 or 4 days later, whatever it was. I came home, and all my shit was in garbage bags, like my clothes. And I said, whoa, what's all this garbage? You said, that's your stuff. You need to leave. And I said, well, do I get the Volvos? He said, no. I said, oh, shit. I said, you know, I got to leave. I got to take that old convertible. Yeah. What are the other options? Get help. Well, how the hell do I get help? I'd like seen AA in like a movie or something like that. And I heard the President Reagan's wife just say no. You know, my mom used to say, can't you just say no? I said, hell no. I can't just say no to that shit. You don't understand. I got three gods. One's green, one's white, and one's liquid form, you know. And they all take over my life at one time or another. And you know what? It's not a bad deal. Until you get married and have a kid, then it's all fucked up, you know. Yeah. So I go into rehab. Well, I'm thinking to myself, I don't know if anybody's ever thought this, but, you know, I'm just going to get the heat off. There are 28 days. I'm in a hospital. I got green and white striped pajamas. I wore them for 3 days straight. I had a roommate. His name was Ice. He was like the color of my shirt. And I thought, holy shit. And I'm in Southeast San Diego in a hospital, to boot. And the nurse says, you might want to think twice about leaving. It's a pretty rough neighborhood. She goes, she looked at Ice, she said, Ice, you could probably get away with it, but you ain't going to make it 20 feet. And I thought, oh, shit. Escaping is not an option, you know. And all the people that came into my room asked me, what's your drug of choice? And I thought, cocaine, I like coke and I like alcohol. And they're laughing. I thought they were going to bring me coke and alcohol. I thought it was like room service, you know? These hot little clean chicks, you know, and these guys, you know, what's the drug of choice? I said, coke and wild turkey, you know? And they're laughing. And I was looking at Ice. I said, damn, dude, I think this place is going to be all right. Well, I didn't get it. Another thing I learned when I was there was they took my deodorant, they took any aftershave, they took just about everything. And I said, I'm in here for 28 days. I'm not sure you're going to want me with no deodorant after about five. And they said, well, there's alcohol in it. I said, you really think I'm going to drink my deodorant? I mean, really, people do that? I said, no. I said, give me my deodorant. I said, if you see a white thing around my mouth, and you know my mustache smells like brute, then you'll know I've been drinking my deodorant. I said, but until then, please, can I have it? You know, I can see where, man, some of you people that blew this before me, you know, were you really drinking your deodorant? I mean, please, just because it said it had a little alcohol in it. You know, everything's got alcohol in it. Mouthwash and, you know, alcohol's in just about everything. You know, and there's no escaping it. Tonight when I was putting on, I wanted to smell. I shaved today. Took a shower. I do that every day. There was time when I didn't need to. And I'm putting on, and every time I put cologne on, I think it's alcohol. Alcohol's going in there. So I squirt it on top of my head. No, go directly in. But, you know, it's in everything. And when I was in rehab, I was impressed by them saying, you know, you're not going to take that with you. And they took my belt, and they took my shoestrings, and I mean, you know, I was like, what do I do with these, you know? Suicide. I thought, oh, shit. So there's been some sick-ass people going those doors before me, you know. And you was one of them. Thanks, you fucked it up for me. I had to flop around in my shoes, you know. Stink a little bit, you know. I thought it might have been you when I got up there. I was either thinking that, or where's the cat that memorized the traditions there? I thought we really messed it up for you. So when I got there, I detoxed, and I looked around with a whole new set of eyes. It had been the first time I had had 3 days without anything in a long time. And it felt good. It felt good to get up. And we were doing work. You know, we were writing a lot. We were into this big blue book. I don't even think I looked to see what it was. They said, do this and do that and do this. And we did. You know, and Ice turned out to be one of the coolest cats ever. And we went in and we became roommates. And we finally got our chance to come out of our detox and go in. And we walked into this room, and there's the steps, and there's the tradition, and there's the word God. God had, I didn't grow up going to church, but I knew there was a God. When I was a real little kid, I thought my grandfather was trying to kill me behind a ski boat. And I looked down in the black water, and I said, God, help me. And bam, I came right out. And since that very moment, I believed, because there was no way without the help of a higher power that I was coming out of that water. And over the course of all time, I had lied to God so many times. The one where it's like, oh God, if you get me out of this, I promise I'll never drink again. I lied about that all the time. God always, always woke up. You know, He always kept His end of the deal. But I didn't. So when I saw God, I thought, oh, man, I'm in big trouble. Because I've been lying to this cat for a long time, and he's pretty powerful. And they said, of your understanding. And someone told me He's not a punishing God. And people told me everything that made sense. And that tonight, we were going to go to a meeting, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went to my very first meeting, and somehow I had to share at my very first meeting, and I said, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what's going to happen. You know, I had no idea that those words were so true. I don't know what's going to happen. I do know, and I did know, because I was in the womb of this super protective rehab that I was okay. And I was going to make it through the night, and I was probably going to make it through the next couple of weeks without a drink and without a drug. And during the course in there, I was able to get on the phone, and I made some amends to my grandparents. And I called my employer, and my employer, you know, taught me so much about life that I still use today, you know, about goals. And you know, there was little bits and shit of stuff that smart people told me that I held on to. And he was so relieved that I was in an institution. People were relieved. They were happy that I was in an institution. Why? What the fuck? I'm locked up, man. Downtown San Diego in a bad neighborhood, and you're happy? Yeah. You know, there was hope for me. My sister had 4 years in these programs. My sister was 12-step everything. Overeaters, overbuyers, overdrinkers, I mean, she was the goddess of 12-step. And she came in and she was in tears. You know, when she saw that I was being introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, she was in tears. She was so happy. And she said, there's another way. There's another way. And I'm still sick as shit. And I'm like, well, Susan, what's the way out of here? You know, give me some insight, you know. How do I get out of this thing, you know? And she goes, you don't. You stay with it. So, in those 28 days, you know, we did a lot of work. Work that I had never seen before. Work on me. You know, I wasn't trying to con you. I wasn't trying to manipulate the situation. And I wasn't trying to do anything. But now I was working on me. And it was hard. And it was physically hard. And it hurt my brain. It hurt my brain to go back and do these inventories, financial inventories, and everything they made me do in rehab. Hundreds of pages. We'd write all the time. And it was incredible how I would feel when that was done. And I was eager to do the next thing. And I was eager to go to the next meeting. And when it came time to graduate out of that, there was a group of 12 of us. And, you know, I thought experiencing that with 12 other people would be the best thing in life. I'm going to go out with these 12 new friends, plus a little group that I've met in meetings, and we're gonna start this life over again. And I was excited, you know, and our first day out, we all come tramping out of this thing, like 10 of us, and we go to the harbor and we do a harbor cruise, you know, and it's a beautiful day in late April. And, you know, and then it was the time to march and the time to do the meetings. And when I got home that night, you know, I got to feel again. You know, I got to feel the joy of being a father, and I got to hold my daughter for the first time sober in my own house. And that was my new high. I had been drinking and drugging forever, and nothing felt like that. Nothing had felt that good. And now, it's a fear-driven program for Todd. I'm scared to death. I've been doing this shit for 20 years, 5 months, and 19 days. One day at a time. And in the beginning, if you're new, it's nanoseconds. Nanoseconds. Flash. You know, and I got through the first year. And the first year was cool. You know, you get 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. You get 6 months. You get, you know, I went to meetings. I wanted one. I wanted a fucking token every day that I didn't reach. You know, I was in it. Just give me, look, you know, let me get up there and give me that token, you know. And I heard people who would come back, and I think, who the fuck would ever do this twice? You know, you got to be crazy, you know. And now I saw God's up there with 20 years sharing, and I thought, he's lying.
but I'm going to listen.
He's lying. Ain't no way. You know, he's only 20 years, you know. He's young. And after my first year, when all the patting on the back stopped and the hallelujahs to Todd and the tokens, it was hard. 1 to 2 was hard. And I was in relapse mode. My red flags were flying. I was plotting. I was calling people I probably shouldn't have been calling. And my sister came over and took me to a meeting. And it's a meeting called the other meeting, which was an offshoot of battery chargers. And my sister made me a promise. She says, I'll meet you at this meeting every Sunday morning at 9 o'clock. And I walked in there, and there was a girl named Beverly that was secretary, a goddess. And I said, oh, hell yeah, you got a deal, Susan. I'll come here every Sunday for as long as I can, you know. And I started meeting people. I'd get there early, and I'd meet people. And I'd stay late, and I'd meet people. And I met men, and I met women, and people were happy, and people were laughing, and you know, and I went to a lot of other meetings, but I latched on to that particular meeting because my sister said that that's a good place for us to be on Sunday morning. And it felt right on Sunday morning. I've never been a church guy. You know, we do the church thing on Easter sometimes, and we do the church thing on when the hell is it? Christmas. I know, I like to sing those songs. They got this shit all over the walls. And I'm singing like I know the words. Like, you know, I've been here before, I know all the words. It's all the Christmas carols, you know, but, you know, I love that. You know, I surround myself with the people I love, and I'm in God's house, you know, and lightning's not hitting me. You know, first time I went in there, I thought, oh man, this ought to be interesting. I'm walking into God's house, you know, And it worked out okay. I got to leave, not get hit by lightning or fall through any trap doors or nothing. Nothing happened. So we did that. And life in sobriety was chugging right along. And I had my second daughter. And, you know, by the grace of God, one day at a time, she was never sitting in the back seat of that Volvo with Daddy out front doing whatever Daddy was doing. You know, and you guys became my service work. You know, I did the coffee making and I did the greeting. But, you know, from that point on, my life was now their life. And there was no more room in there for drinking, no more time in there for anything but them. And Alcoholics Anonymous, and a job. And the funny thing is when I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, I had one job for 17 years instead of 17 jobs in 1 year. And I have never experienced being arrested. And you know what? When I quit drinking, I quit getting arrested. Amazing shit like that happens, you know? It was amazing. You know, my mom one time tells this story that I had been in the jail so many times that I personally knew those guys, you know, and that's probably true. But the gifts that alcohol gave me were incredible. It was my life. You know, I am right where I'm supposed to be in God's plan. Saturday night in front of you guys. Who'd have thunk? You know? Who'd have ever thunk that my best thinking on a daily basis, plotting, all the manipulation, would get me to Alcoholics Anonymous? I didn't think that. I had no idea. But I am. And, you know, it's because there's people in Alcoholics Anonymous that care enough. There's the Randys and the Larrys that go out and they find speakers for these meetings. And I need to give him a hand. Everybody needs to give him a hand. That's awesome. What he's doing is the bomb. You know, it is the bomb. And it gives these people hope when they can watch somebody. somebody share, or when I come here and I can be quiet enough to listen. If I can sit there and stop the shit between my ears long enough to hear the speaker speak. I'm sorry, I forgot about this thing. Hello, can you hear me better back? Is that better? Is it better? Oh my God, I forgot that you didn't. I'm an alcoholic and I have a new toy. Thank you for coming tonight. See, I'm an alcoholic, and it doesn't matter what I do up here. Y'all are going to have to put up with it for what?
45 minutes.
You know, that's not my fault. It's your fault. You came. They invited me. I didn't ask for it. But it's you alcoholics. You know, I applaud the men in Alcoholics Anonymous. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I applauded the women. You know, hot women, that was a good reason to go to a meeting. I didn't care. It got me to a meeting. You know? And the men in these rooms taught me how to be a man. Some of the men in these rooms dragged me up to this mountain up in Palomar, kicked my royal ass. These are alcoholic friends. You know, and it was an experience that changed my life because of a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous. Where is it?
Way in the back.
Hi. You know what I'm talking about. Were you listening? Or were you chit-chatting back there? I sit back there and I take everybody's inventory. Is that what you guys are doing? I love you guys for that. Whoa, I wonder what she's all about. Oh, I wonder what he's all about. You know, and I'd be like, you know, is that his baby or is that his grandbaby? You know what I'm saying? I don't know. You know, it's what I do in Alcoholics. That's what my head goes, you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what I do. You know, and then someone gets my attention. I don't have ADD. Someone has to keep my attention. If you're talking to me and I'm bored to shit, it's not ADD. I'm fucking bored. I'm leaving. I'm done with your conversation. If you are in need, I will listen. I promise you, if a man calls me and he's got a problem and he wants to drink, he owns me. If a woman calls me in Alcoholics Anonymous, man, I'm going to try everything I can to get her to another woman, but I will help. You know, that's what I do in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't want to see you drink. I don't want to see you come back up here and say, it didn't work. I went back out there and it didn't work. Well, what the fuck were you thinking it was going to work? You're an alcoholic. It's not going to work twice. Have you ever gone to a meeting and heard someone say, it worked? I went back out and it worked. I got a good job. I got a hot chick. I got my kids. I got a good job. I'm doing coke 3 times a day. The dealer comes to me. And you know what? I have stock now. I'm so successful in Boone's Farm. You know? They pay me to drink their shit. No, I haven't heard that. When I hear that, he's going to be my sponsor. I can tell you that right now. I want what that guy has. You know? I want all that shit. I want to go to the beaches in Mexico and drink Corona. I want to be the sexy guy in the chair with the sexy girl drinking Corona. But you know what? I'm the sexy guy with the sexy girl drinking bottled water. Down in Mexico, that's all you can drink. You know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, that's another thing. Talking about sexy one. I have been fortunate, such a fortunate man. You know, I was in love with my wife. I've been in love in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm in love now. I mean, right to the frickin' base core of it. You know, I've got a partner I adore. You know, and she's never seen me drunk, and she's not going to see me drunk today. She couldn't see me drunk today because I had a commitment tonight to speak. So drinking was not quite an option. And tomorrow we got some other plans and drinking's not an option then. So, you know, by the grace of God, she won't see me. But you know what? She supports me. And thank you. I truly adore you. And you know how important you are to me. And that's just another gift. You know, I wasn't able to love until I was able to love myself. And look in that. Someone said, look in the mirror. And when you can finally love yourself, then you are ready to love someone else. And that was another gift in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know. How much time do I got? Okay. That works. Thanks for letting me share.